Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, we can really get some music anyway. Well, might as well let it play. Thought I planned it all. Another episode of Wake Up African People, and this is the Truth Doctor, along with Brother Barkley. Guest tonight is the great Ashwa Kwesi, master teacher of our day and time, who was taught by Dr. Ben, and we want to give homage to Dr. Ben, the late Dr. Ben, one of the greatest scholars of our time, to put our history back on track, and Ashwa Kwesi, been picking up his work and been doing it for 35 years, trying to enlighten our people and bring back the history of our ancestors so that they will know that the black man and the black woman had been more than being a slave of the white man. Brother Ashwa Kwesi, the mic is yours.
Hotel, brother. It's an honor to be on your show, Brother Akbar. Education for liberation, that's what it's all about. If we don't have a forum to educate, to liberate, then we will find ourselves in the worst form of enslavement, and that's mental enslavement. And I think our ancestors who were in the chattel slavery, they understood because they could see the change, but today the chains are the invisible chains on our brain. So, you know, having a forum like this is always great to educate our people. And, again, honored to be on the show. And I want to give thanks to the Grand Master Teacher, Dr. Yosef Inyakinen, that we affectionately know as Dr. Ben. If it was not for him, I would not be doing what I'm doing in terms of lecturing and traveling around the country and outside the country and doing our educational tours back to Kemet. And like many of us, as another teacher of mine, Khalid Abdul Muhammad, used to say, the dog that bit you bit me too. So I equally did not know this information until I met Dr. Ben at Long Beach State in 1973. And he gave a very powerful lecture on African history and religion. And I asked Dr. Ben after the lecture, can you prove what you said here today? And he said, young man, not only can I prove it, I can take you back and show you. So that's the first time someone told me that they can actually show me this information that our ancestors documented on temples and tombs and monuments that are still there. They're not mystical places or places that used to be, but the foundation of what we know as Western civilization was based off of that. The foundation of what we see as the various religions, and that includes the Judeo-Christian as well as Islamic and Buddhism, Krishna, all of this is based off of the ancient spiritual system that came up out of the Fallopian Tube. When I speak of the Fallopian Tube, I'm speaking of that 4,000 or approximately 200 miles of the Nile. And Dr. Ben's favorite quote in the Papyrus of Hunefer, that we came from the beginning of the Nile where God happy dwelt at the foothill of the mountain of the moon. So it's been a great honor with this Grand Master Teacher, as we refer to him as Dr. Ben said, you don't become a Master Teacher until you've got 40 years. So in all respects, I have to say that I got five more years before I can be recognized even as a Master Teacher, but an honor that you acknowledge me as a Master Teacher, my brother.
Okay. Brother Kwesi, could you explain your very first time going to Kemet and how you felt to see all these monuments that resemble our people?
Oh, my brother, the first time making that journey back in 1981, actually, and that's when I actually made my journey, and little did I know at that time that I would spend 35 years nonstop returning back to Africa now, going on 35 years. And so, I mean, that the feeling first in awe, you don't know what to say, okay? The fact that the first thing comes to mind is, why weren't you taught this, okay, in the classroom? But, of course, that was the psychological gas chamber. When you're in a European classroom, that you can't expect the enemy to teach you about yourself or to liberate yourself. So coming there, I can say I was overwhelmed with the information, with the knowledge. I mean, we've seen many, many pictures of the grandeur of Kemet that is referred to by Egypt today, that the Greeks called it Egypticus, thus we get the name Egypt, that our ancestors called it Kemet, that literally means black. And, I mean, as I said, the pictures, what we see that so many people see, whether that's the now present-day technology of the Internet or photos, it doesn't even give a justification of these monuments. And then breathtaking is the fact that how old they are and everything that we were taught in the Western world, everything that we were taught to believe in the Western world did not exist yet. And that's been hard for many people to stomach, okay, especially when many people have gotten into their religious system, whether it's Judaism, Christian, Islam, in some cases becoming very fanatical in it in terms of thinking or that their religion is the only religion and the first religion in the beginning of the religious systems, where in fact without the spiritual systems coming up out of Africa, called the Shishata, or the Greeks called it Mysterion, or the mystery system, without that ancient system, going back countless thousands of years of our ancestors' empirical observation of Mother Nature, or Mother Nature. They observed the forces of nature that gave them the spiritual forces, their whole theocracy, okay, and theology, based off of that spiritual science that developed over thousands of years that became part of the whole Maatian system of truth, justice, and righteousness. So, again, you know, going back and first observing in 1981 the Great Pyramid, okay, called Eket Khufu. That's the Great Pyramid in the Giza Plateau. And although it's called great, I always like to correct it because that pyramid was actually called or his son, Khufu, is called Ur, and Eket Khufu was called Eket, or the horizon. Okay, so that would be the sun's pyramid. But as we know it today as the Great Pyramid of Khufu, Khufu, Menkaure, and the Giza Plateau, those three pyramids, it just, I mean, The only thing I can say is that the power and the effect that that had on me back then is due to what I'm doing now, that I never stopped. That you're consumed by the power of this knowledge. The ancestral power takes over. It becomes a part of your DNA. It becomes part of opening up an African ancestral genetic memory bank, in many cases lying dormant, okay, because of the ma'afa that we have gone through. And then once you go back in that empowerment of the ancestors, then that's when that whole awakening starts to take place. I guess if I can say, like a Muslim going to Mecca, what does that do for a Muslim who believes in his faith of Islam? What does, and they take and go back on the Hajj, what does that do for them to return back to that cube structure in Saudi Arabia in the city called Mecca? Okay, this referred to as the Holy Land, okay, or the Holy Place. That's an empowerment, okay, that's the dream to return back, or one going to the Wailing Wall, okay, in Jerusalem. Even though these great structures predate those places, in fact, when I mention Holy Land, the first concept of a Holy Land or the Taneta Land, that started in Kemet, okay? The first time we hear of any place called holy is in right there on the African continent. It's not in Asia. It's not in Europe, okay? It's on the African continent. In fact, the world's first holy city called Abtu, who the Arabs refer to as Abydos, that's the world's first holy city dedicated to a spiritual first creation or first man in the African creation story named Asar. Here we see long before an Adam and Eve story, here we see the creation story. The foundation of what Genesis got its story from is from the ancient Zeptepi, or the spiritual stories of Kemet. And the difference is in the Genesis story, which is, by the way, a Greek name that means the beginning, okay? But that the beginning, the understanding, the difference is the fact that the spiritual mother, okay, and the wife, or the Neter-Hemp, or divine wife of Asar, is Aset. And her Neter-Hedge, or divine husband, is Asar. They were created simultaneously. There was no misogyny or hatred or a rib taken from Asar to make Aset in the African creation story. But as Kemet was invaded, the patriarchs brought in patriarchal as well as a misogynistic nature or hatred towards the woman. So, of course, we get the Adam and Eve story and so on, that Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and because she ate for that tree that was forbidden, okay, by Jehovah, this is the reason why the world sins, okay, as we got it. It's all put on this woman. Well, that wasn't the African creation story. The creation story of Asar and Aset, who were created simultaneously, and as well as evil that was created, and that is the evil brother of Asar, and that is Set. Okay, this is where later on this becomes the Cain and Abel story. So everything that we see and ideas that we see in these religions, many of our people do not know the fact that our ancestors laid this down thousands of years ago and now is totally oblivious to us today. And I think that's the whole foundation when you go back to Kemet, that the foundation of building those structures was based off of that divine order of that spiritual mother and father, Asar and Aset. The whole system was based off of connecting and building and connecting terrestrial and celestial, earthly and heavenly events, and connecting various stellar as well as solar as well as lunar connections to them, who they were a personification of many of this cosmic order, okay, like their spiritual son Haru, that became the sun. Asar became the constellation of Orion. Aset became a Ceres, okay? So here, a whole constellation is still there today. Those stars haven't moved. The sun hasn't moved. Orion's still there. It was based off of the science of the ancient African spiritual mystery system, the foundation of it all. So I think that this is what we have to as a people. I think that Kemet plays a major role as David Walker equally has said, and Martin Delaney and others, that Kemet lays the foundation of our reawakening, okay, out of this deep mental sleep. Because it's one thing to say that we're not on chattel slavery, but we still are into white idolatry. We still worship white images. We still worship images and representation of a God through white folks, and images and representation of God is a Jesus effect and all these things. So we're still caught in the worst form of enslavement, which is spiritual enslavement. And spiritual enslavement is when the enemy becomes the deity and the spiritual subconscious of our mind. And what I mean by the deity or the God, so how the enemy became the deity and the spiritual subconscious of our mind. So this is where we're in effect in the worst form of enslavement, because when we're in spiritual enslavement and still worshiping the very images and representation and a distortion of the spiritual netarus or divine entities of ancient Kemet, when we're still locked into the Eurocentric corruption of this and only see it in their image, then we're in the worst form of enslavement, spiritual enslavement.
Mm. Yes, we are. I want to ask you one more question. I'm going to pass it off to Brother Bartley. When you are over there, is Zahi Hawass still the curator and the person that controls that area?
The last I found that he got fired, okay, because Zahi Hawass was trying to outdo the Macedonian Turk named Muhammad Ali, who plundered a lot of Kemet, like many other invaders before him and after him, and sold a lot of treasures off. A lot of the treasures you see in the European Museum is due to Muhammad Ali. And this was followed up by Zahi Hawass equally, who was involved in selling off some of the treasures of out of the Cairo Museum. He even sold quite a few before Gaddafi was toppled. He sold some of the pieces to him when he came to visit Egypt himself, right there, Ra. Hurlumhekut, here that we commonly call by the Greek name the Sphinx. Here he is right there at the foot of the paws of Hurlumhekut, and here we see that Zahi Hawass had some pieces right there that Gaddafi took back to Libya. So he was off in the business of selling many of the treasures off to some of the richest men in the world, to the highest bidder. So he was fired from being the who's not the curator, but he was the head of the the Egyptian Antiquities Department. That's what it is, the Egyptian Antiquity Department. He was fired from that department. Now, someone said that he might be reinstated. That knowledge I don't have any knowledge of. But Zahi Hawass, I mean, he's an Arabized Egyptian who equally has been fed by the racist white Egyptologists, okay, who have been involved in trying to erase a lot of the history of the African origin there. And it was Zahi Hawass who was involved in trying to make King Tutankhamun, who we commonly know as King Tut, trying to say that he was not black. Okay, so, you know, keep in mind the whole Egyptology, which started by the time when Napoleon came into Egypt in 1798, when he came in. He came in with all his scientists, and this is what started the whole Egyptology, and Champollion and others coming in, stripping off pieces, and he supposedly deciphered the Medu Nature, known as the hieroglyphics. And but anyway, out of all of that, this is what became Egyptology. I don't like to refer to the term Egyptology because it equates with the whole colonial period of Kemet. If anything, I go along with, as Dr. J would call it, as we know as Dr. Jeffries, Kemetology, okay, the whole study of Kemet. Kemet is a part of Africa. Without inner Africa, the Congo, the Great Lakes region, there would never have been a Kemet. So that beginning started in inner Africa. It did not start in Mesopotamia. It did not start in Asia. It did not start in Europe. But back to your question about Zahi Hawass, yeah, he... you know, yeah, he was fired from that department, as far as I know at this point.
Because every time I used to, I just wanted to snatch him through the TV and beat him up.
Well, you know, he's the puppet of the white Egyptologists, okay, who have a lot of control over the antiquities of ancient Kemet. So, I mean, this is, you know, you have to keep in mind this. This is who feeds him, and he makes sure that he gives a white supremacy view on the ancient African antiquities of ancient Kemet. As I take our group into the Cairo Museum and some of the treasures that I show our group, and over the years with like some of the colossal pieces like Amenhotep, okay, of the Middle Kingdom. Here's an African Sultan, or as we call king today, who built pyramids in an area called Hawawa. I mean, there's pyramids up and down the Nile. Most people only know about the Great Pyramid or Khufu, Khafre, Menkaure, but there are pyramids up and down the Nile. In fact, not to jump off course here, but the first pyramid, the Step Pyramid in Saqqara, the world's first stone building, and the world's this is the first pyramid built by the Grand Master Imhotep almost 5,000 years ago, called a Step Pyramid because it's in a layers, like a steps, like symbolically a climbing staircase to heaven. This is where they get the idea from, climbing the staircase to heaven. But that is the first pyramid. So there are many pyramids after that, okay? There's the pyramids, you know, also dealing with Seneferu, okay? And before him, it was his father, Huni, who started to build the world's first true pyramid or perfect equilateral plane pyramid. And then it went into Seneferu, who built the world's first true pyramid that led into his son, Eket Khufu, who built the Great Pyramid on the Giza Plateau, which is that we're most familiar with the true equilateral plane pyramids. And even though it's breathtaking today and even though it blows your mind, but we can only imagine even what that was like when it truly had the white limestone on that pyramid that was ripped off by the Arabs who came in 641 A.D. as in mercenaries, but at the same time, you know, Kemet taking the Arabs in as mercenaries to fight the Romans, okay, who he controlled Kemet, okay, for a couple of millennia. But here we see that now that now the Arabs, when you have to depend on somebody to fight for you, of course, it's not going to be much for them to take over the whole country. And that's what happened from when you see a lot of the plunder with the Arabs that took place when they came in. And like I said, the Romans, the Greeks, the Syrians, and you know, many have plundered ancient Kemet. But when we look at the Arabs and the Great Pyramid, that limestone was ripped off by them.
Mm-hmm. Brother Bartley?
Yes. Yes, brother. I remember you from down in Philly with brother in Shaka Musso. They on Germantown Avenue when they had the...
Yeah, this back in the day with all the communiversities that we used to have.
Yeah, man, those were some good days.
Yes, yeah. Well, we're still doing the communiversities. The communiversities, as Bobby Wright calls it, communiversity. I mean, this is so important because what forms in a community, this is one of the means of educating our people, that we control the syllabus and, you know, we control, you know, what we say, you know, not in a university setting, you know, you have to go by the syllabus and, you know, they tell you what to say and what not to say. But when we have the lectures in a community, we control, okay, we have total control of that. It's kind of like on the plantation, you know, we didn't teach each other how to read and right on Massa's porch. We had to go out to the bush. Okay, so the same thing is going on today. You know, if we don't have these communiversities, in fact, some of the most positive rap groups came out of the communiversities, you know, and now that many of the communiversities are drying up, we can see that in terms of what's happening with our youth. You know, when you don't have people out there teaching and lecturing and exposing knowledge to brothers and sisters, and this is what the enemy wants. Okay, so then you see that, you know, a lot of buck wild stuff is going on out there in the communities. When we look at some of the black bookstores that were, you know, some of the key and that used to bring in a lot of the speakers, and we see that many of these white authors or publishing companies start sending the authors to the black bookstores, then the black bookstores in turn didn't bring in a lot of the progressive speakers, and in turn it didn't sell a lot of the books that we came up on, okay, that started a whole a movement, okay, of our history, you know, and you know, like Dr. Ben's Black Man of the Nile, African Origin of Major Western Religions, and many other books, Dr. Chikanta Diop and Dr. Chancellor Williams, Instruction of Black Civilization. These books were selling because of strong progressive speakers coming into the community, coming into the black bookstores, but when the whites start sending out these authors, okay, and the kind of people that they were sending, like people, you know, when a low-down Negro would write a book on the down-low, and that became the person who came to the bookstore to speak. So there was a strategy in this. There was a strategy to shut off information. They control, in many cases, the radio shows, but fortunately we have, you know, we do have some control, like the program here, the Internet radios, those are opening up now. But for the most part, we are still in a situation where they can try to control the information disseminated in the community. And they found that liberation was coming out of the community through the network of the communiversities, okay, and bookstores and lectures and things of this nature that were going on. And then the attack came when we see the Ashkenazi European Jews like Schlesingers and the Diane Ravages and all these people who were attacking the African-centered movement, especially when brothers and sisters were coming out of inner-city schools and going into the university. They were going in and, you know, C students and then becoming straight-A students and challenging the professors, okay, on this Greek Socrates and Plato and Pythagorean theorem and all this stuff. And they were going back to the personalities that I'm talking about because of Dr. Ben and many others who were lecturing in the community on these grandmaster teachers. And this is what we don't have now in many cases, okay? It's not on the level that it used to be, okay? And this was a fear because they saw that there were cracks, okay, in the white supremacy system that was starting to take place. So they started to channel where this information was coming from, okay? And so that's when you had the whole Jewish onslaught and attack on Dr. Jeffries and Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, even myself, okay, by this Ashkenazi European Jew up there in University of, I can't think of the name right off the top of my head, slipping my mind right now. But he attacked me as long as with Brother Khaled and Muhammad and many others. So there was a war going on, and many of our people at the grassroots level did not know about this war that was taking place. And when Dr. Jacob Carruthers, peace be upon him, wrote his book, The Intellectual Warfare, that book was a foundation of the war, the intellectual war, the attack that was taking place and the fear that the white supremacy system had on terms of us, you know, educating the masses of our people, especially at the grassroots level in the communities. So, you know, this is the power of information, okay, education for liberation. So when that whole attack on the whole information and the inner city communication and communiversities, this is where we see that the whole spirit changed. You know, we see a whole lot of other negative elements were coming out, okay. A lot of it was coming out in the rap, okay, with our youth. Okay, whereas before with KRS-One and Public Enemy, you know, they were, you know, a lot of their lyrics was coming out of what was taking place with this knowledge that I'm talking about right now. Okay, and it was coming out in their lyrics. So whites had a deep fear of this. So this is what we see. This is still a fear. And keep in mind, how do you make a slave in the first place? You take away a people's history, a knowledge of themselves. Then you got a slave. What happens when you start to open that mind again, or to having that African awakening again? Okay, well, this becomes the fear, because now you got mentally liberating Africans who are warriors, who are ready to fight on any level, whether that be an intellectual level or even a physical level, if it has to go that direction as well.
Hmm. Well, that's where we are right now. From my experience, the community was something that kept us together. Now, in Philadelphia, after that fell and Shaka died, everything else just died with it. You know what I mean?
Is peace be upon him, Shaka Musa Bar Shango you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, yes. It came to the center lecture at the Shrine of the Black Madonna that he had there.
Right.
For many came. In fact, Baba Shaka Musa Bar Shango, he returned back to Kemet with us in 2000. Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his book is a powerful source in terms of the liberation of African people. His book, African People and European Holidays, A Mental Genocide, is definitely a holy text for us.
Yes,
okay,
right.
In terms of, you know, that's a powerhouse and still book that I still reference even to this day in my lectures.
One last question. People have a tendency to think that the Egyptians worship all these gods. They had so many gods. From my understanding, most of these gods were worshipped in different eras, like the god Nu. Now, they said that that was the first god of Egypt, most ancient. And then you had other gods, Ptah and all that. They weren't all worshipped at the same time, I don't think. Now, that's just my way I'm...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of the psychopathic racism of Europeans to create any type of negativity over on Kemet, okay? And as long as we have, you know, like it's whether we're looking at terms as pagan, heathen, and as all these negative connotations, it stops a person from researching and thinking about the whole spiritual system. Now, as Europeans refer to as polytheism or many gods, as they refer to it as, Kemet... you know, had spiritual, you know, you had the spiritual monotheism or the one God. But at the same time, you have Netarus. For instance, if we look at the Western version of Christianity and we look at they have this idea of one God. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but all of a sudden you got all these other angels. You got, you know, Gabriel and all these other angels performing all these other functions. Now, if one was to look at that, one could easily say, okay, that might be a form of polytheism. Or if we go to Judaism, if we see that one point God is called Elohim, another point God is called Elohim, another point God is called Yahweh, another point God is called Jehovah, all these different names, okay, one could look at that as being a form of polytheism. When in fact, these are different names at different periods of time, just like in Kemet. If we look at Ptah, here we see the creator deity, the creator god, okay, who's creating the universe, the foundation of the creation story, going back in what they refer to as a pre-dynastic period, okay? So now we come down into a period of the Middle Kingdom, and we see the spiritual god is called Amun, an Amun that we are very well familiar with because we still refer to Amun, okay, at the end of our prayers. And Amun, and keep in mind, Ptah and Amun are always represented as jet black. Jet black was the spiritual representation of the deity of ancient Kemet. And still they can't figure out how our ancestors used paint to last for thousands of years. And this is what the Europeans saw when they came and were introduced to the deity, introduced to God, the idea that they call God. That came from ancient Kemet when they came in and saw the great spiritual system. So here we see Amun of the Middle Kingdom. We come down into the 18th dynasty, and we see Akhenaten, who many of them like to refer to as Akhenaten as being the one that started monotheism, when in fact Akhenaten was practicing and his own African ancestors' monotheism, which he was referring to as monotheist, or meaning the Aten during his period, was just another form of Ra, okay, which is, again, another representation of monotheism, or one god in ancient Kemet. So it depends on what period it is. Then you got the Netarus. The Netarus represent the divine entities of ancient Kemet. Okay, they represent the spiritual entities that play the same spiritual function, as I said, these various angels, okay, that would play in the Western version of Christianity. So this is what. So when the Europeans come in and just pile them up, many of them representing various attributes of Mut Neched. Some even refer to as where they were in an animal worship. Well, this was a keen observation of nature, okay, that they observed, like the falcon, okay, again representing Heru and also representing the sun, because they saw how the falcon flew in the sky all day. So that became the Zoop type, okay, that they used. And there are other various animals that they used, okay, depending on how they saw it. Like when you look at the ibis bird, okay, is a symbol of Maat. But you have to understand the nature, okay, of the ibis bird and why they would use the ibis bird to represent Ma'at, that means truth, justice, and righteousness. Okay, so when you look at the nature of that bird in Inner Africa, where all of these Zoop types are coming from Inner Africa, that's on the temples of Kemet, all have a representation of what our ancestors, from their keen empirical observation of Mut Neched that we call Mother Nature. So observing the ostrich bird, and seeing how the ostrich bird protects its eggs, and how it can even, and when you look at the nature of a lion chasing an ostrich bird, okay, Which one you think will win?
The ostrich bird.
Why? Not necessarily. The lion, I mean, it's obvious that the lion can kill an ostrich bird. But if the ostrich bird is smart, okay, he has to use his highest intelligence to defeat that lion. Okay, to a toe-to-toe fight, the ostrich bird is not going to win against a lion. Okay.
Right.
But he has to time it. He has to time it. When they always say, when you always hear them say, the ostrich bird sticks his head in the sand. Is that right? He doesn't stick his head in the sand. That's what the Europeans see. He doesn't observe. The ostrich bird is timing the lion's approach. But he can't miss. He times it just right, and he has the most powerful claws. He can snatch the lion's face off. But if he misses, it's over. Okay, so again, this was a form of, you know, looking at nature. You also see the vulture. The vulture is used, okay, to represent Mutt or the mother. Okay, why would they use a vulture? Well, a vulture can feed from the talons of, will eat from his own talons to feed his babies. Only a mother could do that. In fact, my wife, she got a presentation that she put together, the goddesses of ancient Kemet, the spiritual foundation of Kemet. That's a powerful presentation that she deals with a lot of the equally the Zoop types, and how our ancestors saw the spiritual system. So this is what the Europeans could not see. Only thing they saw were animals. But at the same time, if you were to look at the presidential symbol for the presidency of the United States, which symbol is that?
The eagle.
It's an eagle. So with 2,000 years from now, would they come back and say the people were eagle worshippers back in the United States? Well, that's the same way that they looked at Heru, which is the falcon, which is equally the representation for the Heru king, because Heru is the spiritual son, okay, of Aset, who she gave birth to at Immaculate Conception and Holy Birth, by the way, the world's first Immaculate Conception and the world's first Holy Birth, and the prototype for the Madonna and Child is coming from her, until the Europeans copied it and corrupted it into a Florestan Italian white female that they got the black man has been worshiping ever since as a goddess. That was taken from Kemet when the Romans and the Greeks worshipped her, and especially the Romans who carried Aset throughout their empire. That's how the whole idea of the Black Madonna even came about. The Black Madonna is no other than Aset. So, but back to that symbolism again. You know, one thing can lead off into another thing. Again, this is where even in the church, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, one can clearly say they were animal worshipers, because Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they are represented as various animals and representation on the symbols of the church. But nobody questions if that's animal worship when we see the symbolism of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, an eagle, a goat, bird, and other symbols that we see that's represented. So it's only until we do that comparative analysis, okay, and to make people think, okay, then you see that they can't say that it was about animal worship or it was about polytheism or many gods, okay, when we understand the spiritual system. When we look at the Western versions of their religions, they're nothing but a corruption of the ancient spiritual systems of ancient Kemet when we understand it and do the comparisons. This is the reason why Kemet has always been feared, okay, feared because it would literally awaken, okay, especially the African mind, okay, to the fact that just like we're a stolen people, they stole our knowledge too. They stole our spiritual system. And once we're able to expose this to our people, then, of course, you know, you can never, you know, a black man or a woman could never see a white person the same. But right now, many of our people are caught up in a white idolatry. Okay, people talk about idol worship and all this other stuff they refer to as Africa. Well, we are in the worst form of idol worship. It's called white idolatry, or the worship of white images, which is the epitome of white supremacy, Christianity, and mental and spiritual enslavement.
Mm. Well, all right, Brother Bob, that's it for you. I want to ask Ashwa Kwesi. This always baffled me. And I lived in Philadelphia, and I used to always see good brother Makassim Africa always sponsor you and bring you in town. But then they had this group called ASCAT, right, that they say Dr. Ben created it, and they had Molefe Asante, supposed to be one of the greatest teacher that gave out more Afrocentric, PhDs. Why is it that you never see them bringing you into these institutions?
Well, the reason is, brother, is because I don't get a white paycheck. Okay, I don't work for white folks. Okay, so as Dr. Ben, peace be upon him, who told me many years ago, he said, Kwesi, if you want to teach our people, you've got to keep your tongue free. And so, and what he meant by that is that, you know, I had to get out the system. I could not be in the system, or, you know, because whites would just call me in and say, you know, you can't say this and you can't say that, or just fire you. As he has, Dr. Ben has said, he's been proud. He was proud that he was fired 49 times. Okay. So, you know, and was proud of it, you know, of how many times. So, whereas many of these people who work in the system, and these professors and so forth, you know, to get these paychecks, and, you know, has got to pay for their mortgages and all this other stuff. So they have to watch what they say, okay, because white folks will let them know in a minute, you represent this university, okay, this is not part of the program, this is not part of the syllabus, this is not part of what we taught you in Western academia, all right? So you got to teach the slave master's teaching. So if you had somebody like myself to come in, of course they could bring me in, okay, but keep in mind, some of us do more protecting of white folks. Okay, we protect some kind of the interests of white folks, all right? And then, you know, so you got all this kind of type of thing. Now, I spent my life doing what Dr. Ben said, to go back and do the field research. Okay, so that's where I spent my journey. Fortunately, I was able to get out of the system and to become independent and create Kemet New Productions, which I produced at that time, started with VHSs and DVDs. This has helped me to stay afloat out here, you know, with the lectures and people bringing me in, and to go back and do the field research in Africa at the same time. Now, of course, if I was locked up in the system, okay, like some of these professors are, okay, they can't dedicate their life to return back year after year after year to do the field research, okay? Now, when I was in the system, I dedicated a lot of my resources to returning back to Africa with Dr. Ben, okay, and traveling with him not only in Kemet but to Sudan, okay, the highlands of Ethiopia for many, many years with him. So this is where, you know, bringing somebody in like me, okay, which would be, you know, would be more on their mind in some cases, you know, what am I going to say about white folks? All right. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not all cases, but, and then a lot of times you've got clique groups, okay? A lot of times they get into cliques, and these cliques are the PhD clique, okay, that they got from white folks in the universities. As Dr. Ben always referred to it as his PhD was piled high in deep shit, okay, which he referred to it as. He went on to get his BS, and he found out it was bullshit. And then he said, well, if I go on and learn a little bit more from white folks, I know they're going to tell me the truth. And then he found out when he got his MS that it was more shit. And then he said he kept studying and studying and studying and researching. He said, I know if I get that PhD, they got to give it up. Well, he said he found out it was piled high in deep shit. See, so, but Dr. Ben told me, he said, Kwesi, look, you know, it's the grassroots people. They are the ones that's going to take care of you out here. They're the ones who are going to bring you into lecture. You know, he said, there'll be some, okay, which there has been, even with me and even with Dr. Ben, okay, who were in the universities that brought him into lecture, and also to bring me into lecture, which I lectured in a university just a couple weeks ago. So it's not all, but those liberating brothers and sisters who are out there who work in the faculty, okay, and have positions, who are not afraid, okay, and they're the ones who actually bring us in to lecture. But a lot of times you get some people get into this elitist bag, and this elitist bag is based off of how much white folks have given them, okay, not how much that they themselves are based in which someone has dedicated their life for African people in some cases. And this is Dr. Ben. In many cases, there's some people out there talking about how much they love Dr. Ben. It's like Malcolm and all the other greats. When they were here, okay, they wouldn't find themselves around Malcolm at all, okay, and didn't like Malcolm in some cases, you know. Once he made his transition, okay, and went on into the spiritual realm, then everybody talked about how they were around Malcolm in the day and how much they loved Malcolm, okay. Well, now here we go now with Dr. Ben. How much they love. I was with Dr. Ben, okay, back to Africa, doing the research with him. When he was making the call that he needed people to help him, they weren't there. They did not come to the aid of Dr. Ben, okay. Some of these Negroes who did not like Dr. Ben, okay, because Dr. Ben did not hold his tongue on talking about white supremacy and white folks. He was right up in their face, you know. So you got some these types of Negroes, they like to talk about other black folks, okay, because they know that their job is not in jeopardy, and they know that a lot of white folks love for us to talk about other black folks, okay. But they don't, you know, they're not going to talk about the vicious system of white supremacy and what this white supremacy has done to African people. Okay, and how we have been a victim, okay, not only in during the time of us in this country, but even on the African continent and even our ancient civilization and the Nile Valley civilization specifically. That's what Dr. Ben dealt with. So this is, you know, this is the kind of stuff that goes on. So I've always found that any time that you see one of these people that lecture and they want to just talk about white folks, I mean talk about black folks, okay, then that's their escape route, okay, from really digging in on the whole white supremacy system and how this, how these white folks, how they have done us as an African people and what they're still doing today and how we are in a matrix of white supremacy. So literally, this matrix, I kind of refer to it as a white supremacy spider web. So it's like the insect that flies in space and time. He doesn't see the spider web, but all of a sudden he finds himself stuck in something. He doesn't know what it is. He's struggling and struggling and struggling, and the spider doesn't eat him. The white supremacy spider just watches his struggle, okay? And here we are in this white supremacy spider web, and we're struggling and struggling against each other in many cases. And then when we are all wrapped up in the spider web, that's when the white supremacy spider said, now it's time to come and not to eat the insect, but to suck his insides out. So a lot of times what we see here is the sucking out of some of these Negroes' insides have been sucked out, okay? And it's the likeness of who they're there, but because of they spent most of their time in the white supremacy system, okay, who they once were is no longer there. It's been sucked out. Okay, because they did not spend time, the majority of their time with our people or developing an institution or school in the community, but they feel comfortable working within the very white supremacy system. Now, I'm not saying this is all cases, okay? In some cases, there are many spooks who sit by the door. I was a spook who sit by the door, okay, and took the resources to do what I had to do to go out and educate our people. And there are some good brothers and sisters out there that's working in the university system, the school system, okay, and taking what they can to help educate our people. But there are those who, with the mindset, who intentionally make sure that they protect the interests of the master.
Yes, and I've noticed that this Malefe Asante brother is supposed to have over 300 PhDs in African studies, is supposed to have over 300 people out there. But I've noticed with more people, it seems like it's less people out here teaching the community. Do you think that was a strategy they used to kill the movement somewhat? And there's one more thing I want to throw with this. And the younger guys that's out here now today, you know, preaching, doing DVDs and, you know, being on YouTube talking about Timid and talking about their beefing with this person and beefing that this person and that person. How do you feel about that? Because it seems like it's, you know, they even got a name for us that leaving Kemet now. They call us Hotep niggas.
Yeah, but that's really sad, brother. When I think about the period that I came and was up under a lot of these grand masters, and some have made their transitions, okay, like Dr. Ben and like Dr. Clark, to see all this going on. When we were out there, we were fighting the beasts, okay? That's where the jugular vein. So when you see when Tony Martin wrote his book, The Jewish Onslaught, all of that was coming out of the battle that we were fighting, okay? That's what we were fighting back then, okay? Or the Nation of Islam, the secret relationship between blacks and Jews. Okay, that's the battleground that we were on, okay? And it seems like the same situation and how the gangs were created. When I was in L.A. and back in the 70s, you know, back in L.A. fighting the Gestapo beast, the LAPD, especially when they killed my friend, okay, when we were going to the Hollywood Bowl back in 1975. So we were out there on the forefront. And they saw the whole political movement that was taking place in L.A. at that time, and how we were definitely going up against the Gestapo beast and the whole white supremacy power structure. And it seems as though about the late 80s, we see a slow movement of the gangs coming in. And with the gangs coming in, from us fighting the system and fighting the beast, now we're fighting each other with the gangs. And this is what took place. So now we see the same thing. How can we take this whole this power of this knowledge that the youth had, okay, and I'm looking at the youth going back to the era that I was coming up in. How do we transform and grab the youth of tomorrow that we see, and that's the youth of today, and have them fight each other, okay, and turn them into each other, just like they detoured the political movement and for us to fight each other by creating the gangs. How do we take this knowledge base that a lot of youth are now gravitating to, but how do we turn it, how do we make it and turn it in where they can turn in on each other and fight each other and create a whole gang based off of the foundation of it is based off of our knowledge, but how do we turn them into to gang knowledge busters? Okay, so to say, I don't know if I'm using the correct term for that, but you know, but kind of like the Crips and the Bloods, you know, how do we turn it into or turn them on each other is what I'm trying to say. And this is what has happened. This is what I see out there, okay? Well, I saw when the Internet first came, that's the first thing I came, I said, damn. I said, these white folks have now created a machine that's going to be a weapon of mass destruction. I'm coming out of the 70s era. I went through COINTELPRO, okay? I had the Gestapo beast come and tear up my house where I was at, okay? And had I been at home sitting on a balcony one day, okay, one night, had I not gotten up off that balcony, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. Mm. When they stormtrooped my balcony back in 1975, okay, with shotguns and everything else. Okay, so here we see that today, with the COINTELPRO machine now is the Internet. We tell every damn thing on that thing. We put everything. They want to control the knowledge, and here we see, since a lot of the youth did not go through this period, that era of the Black Power movement and the late 60s and 70s, and the battleground was taking place, real situation was going on, even though it's still going on today. Okay, when we look at Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice up here in Cleveland, 12-year-old shot down. Okay, Eric Gardner choked to death. The same thing that I was going through, it's still the same thing then. It's going on. It's going on now. So it hasn't changed. But nobody's fighting the system. Nobody's fighting the power, the white supremacy power structure, you know. So there's not a mass movement, okay, as it was back then, okay. But this whole damn Internet now, they watch us fight each other on there. That we put everything that we know on there. Okay, you sitting at a table playing cards with somebody. If the other player knows your deck, how can you play the game? So here, you know, they see our deck. Okay, we don't. You know, that's what's more mind blowing to me. Mark Zuckerberg's people called me 2 years ago to ask me, Ashwell Crazy, can you be on Facebook? I said, what? I said, why would Mark Zuckerberg send you to call me to be on Facebook? I said, little old me, I said, he's got millions of people on Facebook. Well, we just thought you might be interested on being on Facebook. I said, I'm not interested on being on Facebook. I said, I'm just shocked that you would, I didn't know that you solicit people to be on Facebook, though.
Mm-hmm.
So now my son put up a Facebook page, and the reason why we had to put up a Facebook page is because people are making all these, I don't know, maybe it could be Mark Zuckerberg's people, Mark Zuckerberg himself, for all I know, putting up these Facebook pages of me that I have nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm.
So my son had to make one to say the original Ashra Crazy Facebook page.
Yeah,
so here we see,
so
because, oh, yeah, go, I'm sorry, brother. Mm.
It's a Facebook page called Ashwa Kwesi, and it's you.
Yeah, but I have nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
See, so here we see the enemy. No, it wants to control all information now. All right, and a lot of these Negroes don't even know that they're literally going to bankrupt the whole movement. A lot of times, like Dr. Ben's books, with me coming through the era of the VHS, the DVDs, this is what kept us afloat, keeping our tongue free to talk to our people, okay, economically, to continue to produce DVDs, having the technology to do this information. This is what's done that. Now everybody puts every damn thing on the Internet, okay? Nobody wants to people don't want to buy anything anymore because they feel it should be on the Internet. I have to take stuff down all the time. Now, the field research that I have to do, to go over there, to do the research, the time, taking brothers and sisters places that they never go in a lifetime, the details of it. But at the same time, you know, economically, got to still take care of my family and everything else. Don't want to be in the system because I know I would be controlled. Whereas white supremacy, they support white supremacy. If a white boy was doing the same thing that I was doing for white folks, they would give him $5 million and say, don't worry about a thing. Where we out here struggling, and then you got these other Sambo Negroes, okay, who just throw everything on the damn Internet.
Mm.
So I can always tell when I have to take something down off the YouTube or something, because when some cracker calling here, okay, because my stuff is up there on the Internet. Don't even take in consideration that this man's family, okay, may be in jeopardy by you putting on this whole Internet thing and everything else. Now, I put clips on there that I edited myself, okay,
mm-hmm.
just enough to get brothers and sisters' interest into going to our website. Yes, I have a website, okay, but keeping the information, you know, on the level where we should do it, okay, but whereas now we don't even realize we're fighting a goddamn war.
Yeah.
Because we got agents of all kinds. The real agents have gotten pink slips now. They don't need them anymore because they've turned a lot of our people into agents because we feel that everything that we do should be on that goddamn Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we are losing at today. This is where now he's become – now who created a YouTube, Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook, they are now controlling of information, all information. And a lot of Negroes don't even realize that when you put something on there, you don't control that anymore. That's theirs.
Mm-hmm.
The intellectual property is lost. You don't have it anymore. So now they become masters of. So that means anything they want to know about you or anything else or what you do, they want to make sure that it's on there so they know Negroes will throw anything on there.
Mm-hmm.
So the trinkets that got us yesterday on those damn slave ships is the very thing that sent us into another form of enslavement today.
Brother, that's an eye-opener.
Mm.
That is an eye-opener.
And we're not saying, we're just happy. And then as soon as something go down, okay, whereas most brothers, you know, sometimes we get into a little whatever, a little griff or whatever. Okay, time go by. Okay, we can get over it. Now something go down, it's on the goddamn Internet. We typing in, you know, all kind of crazy stuff and all, you know, back and forth on the Internet. And then you don't even know if there's a cracker in between, okay, this escalating it. You don't know who these people are. You know,
well,
so, I mean, so an elder told me one time, I remember I was sitting at a bench at a park, and we had a long conversation. I had a long conversation. I was in my 20s and had a long conversation with this elder, and he said, young man, let me tell you something. He said, you will know when you become an elder. Okay, he said, an old man like me. So you'll know when you become an old man, when the world starts to look real strange to you. Now I realize I'm now an elder because the world is real strange of how we are, just blatantly do what we do. And a lot of it is on that machine called Facebook, or the Internet, or Facebook and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So this is you know, what's going to be the end game, and how the enemy now sits and has control of all information. Whereas one time, all the information that went down, it took place in the community with us lecturing to each other, and we kept it in our own circles, educating each other. And then when we went back on these jobs as spooks, smiling in their face and knowing that we just had our circle of communication or our education in the community. We all got together. So no, we no longer have this sacred bush knowledge, because now we're sitting on Master's porch, which is the Internet, and letting him know every damn move that we're making.
That's just like talk. That's just like talk radio when they used to have some of those black programs on the radio. They would be telling all the business about the community.
Right. I mean, we've always been, you know, back during the time, we always knew when to say something to we understood it, but you know, the enemy didn't understand it. You know, we had a way of coding with our ebonics and communicating to each other. But now, I mean, this stuff is just wide open now, brother. It's just so it's, you know, it's sad. You know, this it is going this way, and you know, you have a lot of, you know, I guess when the real battleground goes down, and everybody's information and their MO and everything that they have on chart. I guess that's when the real wake-up call, the real reality, will take place, but it'll be too late.
But Brother Kwesi, we are over our time, and I just want you to give out the website and the date of your next trip and everything, so those who listen to this radio show will have it.
Okay, I know we kind of geared off, and I didn't realize that we geared off that much, brother. I would have kept it on the historical level and some of the other things that we wanted to discuss. You know, we kind of geared off. We had a little derailment here.
Well, they needed to hear that. People needed to hear that.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. But, again, we do our educational programs every year. We go back to Africa. I'm continuing Dr. Ben's work and bringing brothers and sisters back. And this is Education for Liberation. And we're totally under my wife and I, we totally control it. It's a whole, we have our black-owned travel business. So, you know, it's a complete package that we have for you, educational program package. So we go to Kemet every July. In fact, we're preparing the brochures for this coming July 2016, now presently, which we should have out in the beginning of November or possibly at the end of October. And we do Ethiopia in the winter. So annually, every winter, we go to Ethiopia. That's December the 28th. We do a 12-day trip to Ethiopia and a 15-day trip to Kemet annually every year. So you can go to our website at kemetnew.com. Okay, that's KEMETNU.com. And our homepage will give you information. And then the little black boxes on the left, we have DVDs. And as I said before, These are the DVDs that help support my wife and I. We don't work in the system. Okay, these are studio-produced information that we try our best to put the information there on places and take brothers and sisters places that they may never go in a lifetime. And my newest DVD is The Temple of Amun, The Origin of Religion in God's House on Earth. You'll see it up there. And you can either order from on the computer, or you can call from us. And this is where you can use the computer to help in the liberation. Okay, or you can call us back directly. And then there's clips on there that you can see us in the field and the kind of work that we do. And many of the brothers and sisters have returned back with us, have come back doing bigger and better things. In fact, I'm a perfect example when I made that first journey as I started this program with Dr. Ben. And I'm sorry if I sound on a low key here. I've been doing home remodeling here. That's something that's many years overdue. We're trying to do home remodeling and working with some of our own people to get this thing done. So it's been a couple weeks process going on here. So I've been working all day here, so I may have sounded a little tired as I've been on the program here. I'm sorry, you got cut off. Are you still there, brother?
Yeah, we appreciate you. We appreciate you coming on, and we're hoping to have you again in the future so you can let everybody know what's going on. And I hope everybody that listens to this show tonight will go to the website and buy some tapes or whatever they can, or charter a trip to Egypt if you can afford it, to help support Ashwa Kwesi so you can keep on delivering this sacred information to our people, vital and sacred information to our people.
Yeah, I want to thank you, brother. And that, keep in mind, that what I'm doing with this program, and many others have struggled to do this. I mean, even Dr. Ben, he needed money doing this as well as, peace be upon him, Dr. Clark. So people see people out there and they praise them a lot, but little do they know the economic struggle that we have to go through to do this. Keep in mind, when you work in the system, you get pensions and retirements. We don't have that. We don't have pensions and retirement. We just went out here on the limb, and just hope for the best. And so that's why, Dr. Ben's elder life, money had to be raised for him, as well as Dr. Clark. Peace be upon him. Even Steve Coakley, another good friend of mine, who literally made his transition broke, Khalid Abdul Muhammad. We had to raise money, for his funeral. So people, when they do these things and rob the people of the resources to help them do what they do, they have no idea what they're doing. I got 10 projects on the shelf that I can't even get off the shelf because, you got to get out there and lecture, to help pay your bills. You can't think clear if your resources are not coming in. And this is what these kind of people, and they do all kind of bootleggers, do all kind of things, try to justify the robbing and stealing of people's material and trying to justify it. In some cases, even selling it more than what I'm selling it, and then say, Kwesi, he's just about the money, and crazy stuff like this here. My truck is 15 years old. All right. The house I've lived in this house 20 years. We live to do what we do. We don't have no mansions and buying new cars. We don't have none of that kind of stuff. But we make sure that we keep all of our money as low as we can, our expenses as low as we can, so we can do what we do for the people. And this is what I see with a whole lot of seem like a generation out here now doesn't even see. Whereas before, you had that support out there. But a lot of brothers and sisters are have given up. Okay. So the culture, in some cases, is being destroyed by some of our own people. By robbing the resources of the very people who keep the information out there. But when we look at white folks, they buy all the stuff from white folks and the new stuff that comes out, but they don't say nothing about that. Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook, he's doing it for the money. He's a billionaire. many times over. Okay, the computers that they buy, they don't say that Sony and Toshiba and the Mac, okay, that many of these Negroes and all this stuff that these Negroes got, they don't say they're doing it for the money, and they are billionaires many times over.
Mm-hmm.
So I know,
well,
I know my frustration is being expressed over your community here, brother, so I know I didn't mean to come out with all this, but I'm just giving you the reality of, you know, what's going on. And now that I'm facing my elder stage, and now I'm here, I'm like facing the same thing that Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and many others. You know, you look at no pensions, no retirement. You know, you're just out here.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's not good. Our people should support you guys and buy everything. And I mean, they got guys out here promising them schools that have no paperwork, no plan, no nothing. They sending their money in there.
It's crazy, brother. You know, it's like you know, just rob everything that you possibly can. You know, so it's like it's like now we see that the demise of our culture is by the anytime somebody sees somebody out there, okay, selling other people's stuff. Okay, these are the agents. That's what I call them, agents who are out there to destroy the very person stuff that they're selling without their authorization of selling it.
Mm-hmm.
To create mass destruction on our people. You know, it take me like 2-3 years to make a DVD. For a Negro to go rob it and sell it off, okay, and then try to justify it.
Mm-hmm. And then get mad at you when you speak up about it. I remember
exactly.
When I used to call, every time I seen somebody bootlegging, I used to call you and say, this guy's bootlegging your stuff. You know, I had a real bad argument with this guy in Philadelphia. Talking about Ashwat crazy, he just about the money, he greedy, should be hoping that people can see his DVDs. And I said, man, you out of your mind, brother. The brothers
so how am I going to continue to produce them if the people don't support them? I produce them and then I'm going to walk around and eat out of garbage cans.
Yeah, that's what they think. But we have a lot of ignorant people. And I'm calling out to all the people, don't fall into the ignorance. I have never bootlegged a tape or even thought about bootlegging one of my brother's tapes because this information is very vital for you to get, for your children to get, especially your children, to uplift them from this mental genocide that our people are in right now today. So, Brother Quay.
That's what I said, brother. I got 10 projects on the shelf, brother. And one thing I have to say about, peace be upon him, Steve Coakley, you know, before he left and, you know, made his transition, one of the things he told me, he said, Brother Quay, I could see it in your face. He said, brother, don't let the spirit killers kill your spirit. He said, I always see it in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 10 projects on the shelf. And I know why it's a struggle to produce more stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
I know why it's the words before I could get into it. Now it's, you know, it's like, you know, you don't get the support. You know that you're trying to find another means of doing something. And I know what it is. It's exactly what Steve Coakley told me. Don't let them kill your spirit, brother.
Mm.
and this is what's happening, huh?
Steve Coakley was a great black man, and I ain't going to tell you no lie. The last time I seen you in Philly, your face kind of looked like that, too, when I came there. You didn't look happy as you used to look all the time. And the same thing happened to Dr. Ben and
well, you know, when you hear people saying stuff like that, brother, you know what the struggle is, and you know what you love to do for your people, and you know what you can do for your people. You see, and that's what I'm saying is just like it's a whereas before, you know, there was a movement, okay, that we had, you know, whereas now, you know, you often wonder, did these white folks, okay, produce these people to come out into our community? I'm really, you know, thinking that this is what has happened, and produce these people to destroy us.
Well, the brother who produced Sankofa said that
Holly Karima. I mean, he had more projects to give us too, but that, you know, they destroyed the brother's whole operation.
Holly Karima's
a genius. What else could he have given us?
Yeah. And they said that a Jew and a Muslim teamed up together and was bootlegging his tapes in New York, bootlegging Sankofa in New York.
Right.
And everybody always talking about when they're going to come out.
You go and bootleg white folks' stuff, and they got the FBI and everybody else coming down on your behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because them bootleggers and people that sell the tapes out in the street now, they got the hide.
The Nation of Islam. They don't bootleg the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam coming from that old school. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that old school, you come up missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we need some of them tactics to get some of these bootleggers off the streets and off of our stuff. Bootleg the white folks' stuff. They can afford it. But they can't bootleg your people's stuff that's trying to lift you up into a higher state than what you're in mentally.
Right.
And we're gonna cut the show off here because I am tired, and I know you probably tired too, Brother Bartley, and you've been moving around all day.
Well, brother, we come back on here again, you know, we'll keep it and we'll try not to derail the train, but, you know, one thing leads to another, and, I try to deal with the connect the past and the present as this Sankofa, you know, from West Africa, you know. I got to return back to retrieve that which we have lost to understand the present to go into the future. So, but it's an honor to be on your show and look forward to being on a future show again, my brother. The epitome of white supremacy coming up, you know, as I always say, the time of white idolatry is during the time when these holidays coming up. So maybe I can get back on your show right before some of these holidays come up.
we'll do the Christianity thing.
We can go in depth on that. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, we're going to say good night to the people, and we are so glad to have Ashwa Kwesi for the first time. I've been wanting to get him on the show, but I just couldn't catch up with him because I was doing things. And Brother Bartley, you know, we've been trying to keep this show out and going and giving our people positive information that can help them and uplift. And I'm saying, once again, it's the truth, Doctor. Stop bootlegging our teacher's material. If you see anybody bootlegging the material, his number, Ashwa Kwesi's number, is out there. Dr. Jeff's number's out there. All these people have numbers and where you could contact them and let them know who's bootlegging their stuff. And if you're bootlegging their stuff and get to sleep at night, I feel sorry for you.
Well, my brother, next time I come on here, I'll be done with my, trying to take care of my house around here, you know, because, you know, running in and out of the house, it was getting kind of rough around here. And I hope I'll be rested up a lot better than I was this time as well.
Well, you did very good, brother, because that information needs to be put out there, you know, about the bootleg stuff. I mean, this is a travesty. So we're going to all say good night. I got to get in here and get my rest, get up in the morning early. And thank you again for coming on our show, and we will be having you again soon.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Many thanks to both of you, brothers, and keep the Education for Liberation University airways going, my brother, because it's another forum and vehicle that we definitely need to help liberate the minds of our people.
Thank you, brother.
This has been another episode of Wake Up African People, Ma'at Hotep.
Ma'at Hotep. Shemotep.
Hotep.